CIA and CDC, as well as a former CIA general counsel. Playing themselves were ex-Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle and Indianapolis Congresswoman Susan Brooks. Daschle, a former Army intelligence officer who was among the targets of the 2001 anthrax-laced letters, became a pharmaceutical industry lobbyist by 2018. Susan Brooks, the so-called member from Eli Lilly, founded the Congressional Biodefense Caucus. She also introduced a successful bill in 2015, the Social Media Working Group Act of 2014, to establish a social media bureau within the Department of Homeland Security to facilitate censorship of social media during national emergencies. Another of her bills in 2015 sought to streamline implementation of coercive vaccination programs by the federal government during pandemics. Clade X live-streamed on Facebook before about 150 invited guests, including carefully selected representatives of major media. The simulation left his adulatory press quaking with fear. "This mock pandemic killed 150 million people. Next time, it might not be a drill," Jeff Bezos's Washington Post headlined. The New York Post assured readers that the world is completely unprepared for the next pandemic. As the Post's reporter summarized, the simulation mixed details of past disasters with fictional elements to force government officials and experts to make the kinds of key decisions they could face in a real pandemic. It was a tense day. The exercise was inspired in part by the troubled response to the Ebola epidemic of 2014. Unlike Ebola, which spreads through direct contact and bodily fluids, this latest was a flu-like respiratory virus which would spread far more easily from person to person through coughing and sneezing. In the exercise, schools closed, the demand for surgical masks and respirators far exceeded supply, and hospitals in the United States were quickly overwhelmed. Among the difficult questions, an entry ban on flights from other countries, who should get the vaccines first? It's noteworthy that none of the Hopkins simulations contemplate the efficacy of repurposed medications to mitigate or end the pandemic. And none of them allow for soul-searching about the abolition of constitutional rights and the wholesale destruction of America's political and judicial systems in favor of a tyrannical medical and military junta. None of them recognize that there is no pandemic exception in the United States Constitution. Instead, they were too busy wargaming a high-level mutiny against American democracy. All of the Hopkins simulation stories end with the same affirmations: the advisability of militarized police state response and the dire need for broadly deployable mRNA vaccines, upon which Gates and Fauci had already invested billions of dollars. Players underscored the need for the United States to go from bug to drug faster. And each simulation highlighted the so-called need to quarantine and isolate the healthy, censor criticism of the Gates-Fauci vaccines, and coerce the population into receiving vaccines rushed into distribution, all in opposition to logic, common sense, and previous public health practices. Hopkins Center Director Tom Inglesby explained that the event's immediate purpose was to provide experiential learning for new decision-makers in the Trump administration. Of course, the event's embedded press corps lauded Gates as the hero of the day, the beneficent billionaire whose genius alone would save us from the murderous contagion. An adulatory New Yorker article, "The Terrifying Lessons of a Pandemic Simulation," giddily embraced the images of a nation at war, with Gates as the general atop his gleaming white steed. Philanthropist-in-chief Bill Gates drew on models developed by the Gates-funded Institute for Disease Modeling, IMHE, a venture founded by his former Microsoft colleague Nathan Myhrvold, to warn that, at our current state of readiness, roughly 33 million people would die within the first 6 months of a global pandemic similar to the 1918 flu. Gates would deploy his IMHE minions in January 2020 to grotesquely exaggerate the COVID-19 predicted mortalities, 22 million dead in 12 months, to justify Tony Fauci's draconian lockdown. Where did the mock virus originate? In this scenario, someone has genetically modified a mostly harmless para-influenza virus to kill, recounted MIT Technology Review. The fictional culprit is a brighter dawn, a shadowy group promoting the philosophy that fewer people, a lot fewer, would be a good thing for planet Earth. Johns Hopkins pandemic specialist Eric Toner created the scenario after carrying out meticulous research to come up with a plausible threat using real virology and epidemiological models. The result was so realistic that the organizers chose not to present too many details. A clear strategic objective for Gates and Fauci was the repetition of the message that a global pandemic was inevitable, that only mandatory vaccines could avert catastrophe, and that obliteration of civil rights will be required. Most astonishing was their capacity to mobilize the obliging global media to uncritically swallow and promote these propositions in complete contradiction of all previously accepted science and history. That same month, PBS's NewsHour, once revered as the most incorruptible of all U.S. television media, ran an adoring feature on Dr. Fauci, prominently touting the need for a universal flu vaccine in a two-part report on why another flu pandemic is likely just a matter of when. PBS cut to a tour of Fauci's Vaccine Research Center with Dr. Barney Graham, co-inventor of Moderna's mRNA vaccine. In the next segment, the PBS reporter asked Dr. Fauci about a shot to protect against all known and unknown strains of the flu virus. Dr. Fauci replied, "Several years ago, I wouldn't have been able to give you even an approximation of when that would be, because the science wasn't giving us the clues that we could actually do that. Now, with these exquisite techniques of structure-based vaccine design, I think we are in shooting distance." Dr. Fauci continued, "We have got to be able to have something that, when a new pandemic virus emerges, we already have something on the shelf to do something about it, something that you could make, and it would be usable so that when you stockpile it, it really is a stockpile." The show was functionally an infomercial for Moderna and mRNA vaccines. PBS didn't mention that Dr. Fauci's NIAID had pumped massive funding into Moderna's vaccine, or that NIAID claimed patent rights and stood to profit handsomely from its approval. Nor did PBS acknowledge that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation had previously given PBS NewsHour millions of dollars, or that by 2019, Gates had also bet millions on Moderna's mRNA vaccine. Gates owns a substantial equity stake in the company. In September 2019, the Gates-funded Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security followed up on its Clade X event by issuing an 84-page report, Preparedness for a High-Impact Respiratory Pathogen Epidemic. The report focused on the only endpoint that seemed to really concern Gates, the Gates-Fauci mRNA vaccine project. If there was any doubt that pushing mRNA vaccine was the entire purpose of the exercise, the white paper cleared that up. The Clade X summary called for making the top priority of all government, media, and biosecurity players the coordinated drive for R&D aimed at rapid vaccine development for novel threats and distributed surge manufacturing. Nucleic acid, RNA, and DNA-based vaccines are widely seen as highly promising and potentially rapid vaccine development pathways, though they have not yet broken through with licensed products. Both Gates and Fauci had already invested such enormous financial resources in that technology. In this light, the simulations can be interpreted as marketing and public relations exercises designed to recruit and train political, military, media, and public health officials to advance their enterprise using censorship, propaganda, and state-sponsored violence if necessary. The report concluded with a revealing warning about biosafety, particularly for countries that are funding research with the potential to result in accidents with pathogens that could initiate high-impact respiratory pandemics. The report warned that the possibility of deliberate release could substantially add to the extraordinary consequences that would follow a naturally occurring pandemic event with the same agent. Mass vaccination strategies should be developed and put in place to increase immediate access. Put simply, through the medium of this sponsored report, Gates is saying that we need a rapid mass vaccination strategy in place to anticipate the accidental or deliberate release of the kind of enhanced pathogens that his working partner, Dr. Fauci, was funding the development of in Wuhan under the pretext of vaccine research. Though Gates's simulation highlighted the need for masks and respirators, Gates, Dr. Fauci, and Kadlec ignored stockpiling these items, and the same for any antiviral drugs that might successfully treat sick people. Instead, they were laser-focused on next-gen vaccines, on compulsory administration to healthy uninfected populations, on censorship and other coercive devices, on constructing and controlling global health agencies, and on surveillance technologies. Global Preparedness Monitoring Board. Later, in May 2018, with imprimatur from the WHO and the World Bank Group, Gates created a kind of permanent standing committee called the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, GPMB, including some of the most powerful global public health kingpins, to institutionalize the lessons derived from all these scenario planning drills. The Global Committee would serve as the real-life authoritative collective for imposing rules during the upcoming pandemic. This so-called independent monitoring and accountability body's purpose was to validate the imposition of police state controls by global and local political leaders and technocrats, endorsing their efforts to take the kind of harsh actions that Gates' simulation modeled, subduing resistance, ruthlessly censoring dissent, isolating the healthy, collapsing economies, and compelling vaccination during a projected worldwide health crisis. GPMB's board includes a pantheon of technocrats whose cumulative global power to dictate global health policy is virtually irresistible. Anthony Fauci, Sir Jeremy Farrar of Wellcome Trust, Chris Elias of BMGF, China's CDC Director George Gao, Russian Health Minister Veronika Skvortsova, WHO's Health Director Michael Ryan, its former Director Gro Harlem Brundtland, its former Programming Director Ilona Kickbush, and UNICEF's Henrietta Holzman-Fohr, who is former Director of USAID that used to be a reliable CIA front. In June 2019, about 20 weeks before the start of the COVID pandemic, Dr. Michael Ryan, Executive Director of the WHO's Health Emergencies Program, summarized the conclusions of GPMB's pandemic report, warning that we are entering a new phase of high-impact epidemics that would constitute a new normal where governments worldwide would strengthen control and restrict the mobility of citizens. Crimson Contagion 2019. That August, not even 10 weeks before the first COVID-19 infections were reported in Wuhan, a 2019 war game codenamed Crimson Contagion capped 8 months of planning overseen by Robert Kadlec, who was by then President Trump's disaster response leader. Also involved in this virus war game scenario was Anthony Fauci, representing the NIH, Dr. Robert R. Redfield of the CDC, and HHS Secretary Alex Azar. The HHS Office of Preparedness and Response teamed with the top spooks at the National Security Council to lead the four-day nationwide functional exercise. So now Kadlec, who had for 20 years been writing scripts for using a pandemic to overthrow democracy and curtail constitutional rights, was in a perfect position to do just that. With this virus simulation, he included all the key players who would manage what was to become a de facto coup d'etat 60 days hence. While earlier simulations functioned as training drills for high-level political, military, press, intelligence agency, and regulatory commissars, the 2019 Crimson Contagion simulation functioned as a nationwide crusade to evangelize state-level health bureaucracies, municipal officials, hospital and law enforcement agencies across America with the messages developed in the preceding simulations. Under a veil of enforced secrecy, organizers staged the Crimson Contagion exercise nationwide at over 100 centers. Participation included 19 federal departments and agencies, 12 key states, 15 tribal nations and pueblos, 74 local health department and coalition regions, 87 hospitals, and over 100 healthcare and public health private sector partners. The simulation scenario envisioned a novel influenza pandemic originating in China labeled H7N9. As with COVID-19, air travelers rapidly spread the deadly respiratory illness across the globe. In this scenario, by the time U.S. health officials first identify the virus in Chicago, it is already galloping like the Grim Reaper across other metropolitan areas, forcing the HHS secretary to declare a national public health emergency. The WHO delays a month before declaring a pandemic. The multi-state, multi-regional exercise that took place just months before the real-world COVID-19 pandemic focused on critical infrastructure protection, economic impact, social distancing, scarce resource allocation, prioritization of vaccines, and other countermeasures, again, not including therapeutic medicines. The Crimson Contagion exercise achieved eerily accurate forecasting, with numbers that precisely predicted the official casualty data for COVID-19. 110 million forecasted illnesses, 7.7 million predicted hospitalizations, and 568,000 deaths in the United States alone. The draft report, dated October 19, 2019, and marked not to be disclosed, didn't become public until the New York Times obtained a copy under the Freedom of Information Act and published a front-page article on March 19, 2020, 8 days after the WHO declared COVID-19 a pandemic. Only under pressure from another FOIA request did Kadlec's HHS Office of the Assistant Secretary of Preparedness and Response release the January 2020 After Action Crimson Contagion Report the following September. The Times story contained this paragraph. Quote, the October 2019 report documents that officials at the Department of Homeland Security and Health and Human Services, and even at the White House's National Security Council, were aware of the potential for a respiratory virus outbreak originating in China to spread quickly to the United States and overwhelm the nation, end quote. The New York Times takeaway missed altogether the larger and more significant stories, that the Crimson Contagion's planners precisely predicted every element of the COVID-19 pandemic, from the shortage of masks to specific death numbers, months before COVID-19 was ever identified as a threat, and that their overarching countermeasure was the pre-planned demolition of the American Constitution by a scrupulously choreographed palace coup. The Crimson Contagion draft report complains that existing federal funding sources were insufficient to combat a pandemic and concluded predictably that government officials needed far more money and far more power. A significant topic of concern centered around the inadequacies of existing executive branch and statutory authorities to provide HHS with the requisite mechanisms to serve successfully as the lead federal agency in response to an influenza pandemic. The team noted that the group concluded they would soon need to move toward aggressive social distancing, even at the risk of severe disruption to the nation's economy and the daily lives of millions of Americans. Top off 2000 to 2007. In the course of researching this book, I discovered that beginning in 2000, the security, military, police, and intelligence agencies have been secretly staging other mass